As a family that's looking ahead to college for three kids, one of them just having turned 11, it's not all that far away. It's a conversation that I'm anxious to have with David Murata. Joins us, the president of Murata Wealth Management, on funding a college education. He's online at murataonmoney.com, and we're going to be talking all about it today. And we'll also welcome you at 977-1070. Hey, David, welcome back to The Shilling Show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right. So I guess the first thing I want to talk about, in today's world, the value of a college education, I don't mean the dollar value because we'll get to that later, but I'm hearing more and more people, and I have to admit to you that I am among those looking at college as something that may be optional. And it's kind of odd to say that because my parents' generation was like, of course my kids are going to college. And now I'm thinking it may be more destructive than helpful.
Yeah, it's interesting. My parents were perhaps a little bit out of the ordinary in that they asked all of myself and my brothers if we wanted to go to college and if we didn't want to go to college. And it wasn't a slight to say maybe you shouldn't go to college. My brothers and I went to MIT, Stanford, and USC, so they're all good schools. We were all good caliber students, but it was an open question that you didn't need to go to college for some things that you wanted to do in life, and you did need to go to college for other things, and it was an optional choice, and that it was a choice that was made deliberately, asking the question, "What do you want to do with your life?" And I think my parents prepared all three of us well to know what our interests were before we attended college, in order to know why we were attending college and what we wanted to get out of it. And I think that's what's changed, is now the assumption is, and the mantra is, and the drumbeat from government, you have to go to college because that's the only way that you're going to do what you need to do. But it's never said what it is that you need to do. And so kids go to college thinking that a college degree is going to be as productive as a non-college degree. And it's simply not true anymore. It used to be worth about $1 million in earning potential. That $1 million was worth a lot. Now with inflation, I think it may be worth less than $1 million in terms of the difference between going to college and not going to college. And I was, I was talking to one person and they said, in my field, the number one thing that you need to do is to have worked in a video store and dropped out of college, because that seems to be what all of the people that I admire the most in my field have done.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about knowing what you want and why you go to college, because I went to college and I don't regret having done it, but I really had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do. And I really didn't give it much thought. I had some high school counseling sessions where they said, hey, come and fill this thing out and it'll tell you what you ought to pursue based on what you like and dislike. And it wasn't very accurate. But, I spent the whole time, and then many years after college, really not being sure, but always doing something that I enjoyed doing. And I think that rattled my parents a little bit, because that wasn't the way that they saw the path. It's like you go to college, then you get a job, and then you stay there.
Yeah, college is a very expensive way to find yourself. And
yeah.
And a lot of people who graduate from college now spend their entire 20s trying to find themselves. And suddenly, they get the terrible advice, I think, that you need to use your 20s frivolously because you'll have to settle down later. And so you should be a barista and be an artist and go follow your passions and move around the country a lot. There's a psychologist at the University of Virginia, and she does a lot of counseling of people in their late 20s and 30s who are absolutely miserable following that advice. And she's written a book on it, and her book recommends that you need three things by the time you're 30. You need a place, a location where you have a community that you're living in. You need a position. You need to have a job that's meaningful work and that is a career path. And you need to have a person. That is, rather than playing the field and sleeping around, you need to settle down and to actually find someone to build a life with. And it's the exact opposite advice that most young people get. They get this idea that don't settle down, date a lot of people, move around the country, travel while you're young. And they find that as they're approaching 30, they're very miserable because of it. It doesn't just start in college. If I could give one piece of advice for parents, I would give the piece of advice that by the time your kids are 14, they should be spending their summers exploring various careers. And so with our kids, we said, you have to do something for the summer. It's good if it gets paid, but it's fine if it doesn't. And it has to be something that is not just to earn money, but something that you consider a potential career choice. So no lifeguarding and fast food. If you want to go sit and volunteer at a graphics design shop, or you want to try out film editing, or you want to try writing blogs on the internet, you have to try writing novels. You have to do something that's meaningful work that you sit down and you pretend like it's a job. And because of that, you learn job skills, but you also try out so many different things that by the time you go to college, you know what you don't like and what you don't like. And so you're not quite as lost as the typical college freshman trying to find themselves. You at least have found out who you are. Now you need to find out what the various disciplines are and see which one of those is a great match.
When I was a kid, one of the things my parents did encourage me to do was to contact people in various fields that I might be interested in. And so I remember we had a family friend who was a dentist, and I contacted him. And I kind of remember the gist of the letter that came back was dentists may be out of business in a generation because we're coming up with all of these things to keep your teeth from rotting. And so I'm not sure I could recommend it. So I checked that one off the list. One of them was law. And I remember a friend of the family worked as a lawyer in downtown Los Angeles. And I was probably 12 or 13. I remember going down and sitting in a court with him one day and watching that. And then the other one that's very interesting was we had family friends who were friends with the Tunney family in California. And I think the congressman was John Tunney, and his brother was the boxer, Gene Tunney. And I wrote a letter to him one time about pursuing politics. And lo and behold, many years later, that actually happened in my life. So these things can happen.
Yeah, there's nothing that's more beneficial. Even sometimes spending one day shadowing someone will tell you whether or not you love it or you hate it. I met a poor young man who just graduated from law school, and he was an estate planning attorney. He said, had I sat one day with an estate planning attorney, I would not have gone to law school, and I hate it. And now I've spent all this money on an estate planning law degree, and I really don't like it. And I'm thinking about moving into financial planning, which was the reason he was having lunch with me. And I said, well, have you sat a day with a financial planner? And he looked at me and he said, no, I haven't. I said, you need to go do that to decide whether or not that calling is for you or not. You know, each one of us is a unique individual, and finding out who you are is important. And you shouldn't wait until you're 21. You know, historically, 14 was the time at which you were apprenticed and had a career. And I have found most 10 to 15-year-olds actually want to do something real. They're tired of just doing frivolous things. They want to do something that's real. They want to do something that's unique. They have that longing, and they're not too young for it. You know, my kids were doing meaningful work, when they were 10, and they started getting paid for it when they were 14.
I get concerned that a lot of the things that young people do today, but us as a society, are not tangible. In that, you know, when you say doing real work, I mean, I think about getting your hands on something, at least figuratively. And these days, it seems like there are more opportunity to do things that aren't really real or aren't really important.
Yeah, you know, not really real is okay with me. Web designers make a tremendous mm-hmm. amount of money. And you know, both my kids were interested in web design. And one of them was very, very good at it. And, you know, designed my first website for our corporate when she was 10. And is still writing computer programs for us and back office. And she's phenomenal. You know, so having a decade in the field before you go to college is a great start to a wonderful career. And sometimes that kind of abstract stuff is completely available to 10 to 14-year-olds, mm-hmm. whereas, you know, construction may not be allowed, you know, to 10 to 14, but things like that are. And so sometimes the careers are limited for 10 to 14-year-olds, and you have to do volunteer work, but sometimes it's not.
Before we go to the break, and we've got just a little over a minute left, you talked about, you know, some people should and some people maybe shouldn't go to college. Let's focus on the latter, because we're going to spend time on the other in the next segment. But, I mean, what would be some indications for parents or for individuals that maybe you shouldn't be doing this?
There are certain careers, I think, that if you actually did the math, the earnings that you can do the earnings and experience you can do the four years in college are better not spent in college. So industries like trade. Mm-hmm. If you have some kind of a trade, a construction, plumbing, drywall, all of that, it's in tremendous need. It gets paid pretty well. And the experience that you can have apprenticing under a master and getting that certification of a master whatever, a master plumber or something like that, a master electrician, is much more valuable than going to a tech school or something like that, because you actually learn on the job in a way that you don't learn any other way. And, you know, as an example, I got my certified financial planning degree, and I also mentored under my father. Mm-hmm. Were I to compare those two experiences, mentoring under my father was infinitely better than all of the classwork in the CFP. That's not to denigrate the CFP at all, but it's to say the CFP gives you a great framework within which you can put wisdom, but if you have somebody who can give you wisdom, it's much better.
977-1070 is the phone number. We're coming back on the other side with more of David Morata here on The Shilling Show. Funding a college education. We're going to talk about the high cost, why it is so high, and what students and parents can do about it. Stay with us. Much more of The Shilling Show is straight ahead, and 977-1070 is the phone number. David Morata is our guest, online at moradaonmoney.com, the president of Morata Wealth Management, talking today about funding a college education. So let's jump into this right now, because there are ways to go about this, despite what the government tells you and what you're hearing. And I know you had a list of things that savvy high school students and parents could do regarding funding college.
Yeah. So the first thing is that your kids should be savvy about money. And we think kids need to learn probably at age 10 and up how to spend, how to earn, and how to save. And the saving is saving and investing. And they need that with instruction and example and experience. And you need to give them all 9 of those boxes, if you will, in order to be able to really create money-savvy kids. And I think money-savvy kids begin to understand what college is about and how college could either pay for itself or it couldn't, and whether or not they should be borrowing or they should begin to be kind of figuring out how to save and spend money less.
Let me ask you a quick question about that, because we talk about kids who are disinclined or maybe not well-suited for college. Are there some kids who just really have a hard time with the concept of money? Because it certainly seems I've run across them that they just don't get it no matter how much you tell them or try to instruct them. They're just loose and free with money, and it doesn't seem to matter to them.
Yeah, I think those are usually the kids who go to college, unfortunately, because because their parents are well off and basically just buy everything for them and don't give them an opportunity to have experience with money. When our kids were fairly young, we gave them the money that we would have spent on them, and they had to decide how to spend it. So they had to decide clothes, toys, whatever. And it's interesting, when kids have to buy their own clothes, suddenly they are not disappointed when they get nice clothes for Christmas, because they know that frees up money for discretionary spending for other things that they can spend it on. So we gave our kids experience with money early on, and I think it helped them figure out how to budget. Then later on, when they were working, they were supporting themselves. And so, you know, by the time our kids went off to college, most of, other than room and board and food and stuff like that, most of their other things they were paying for themselves. And it creates, I think, money savvy kids, because they've had that experience. So we try to give them experience with all of that. And then the work experience I talked about, age 14 and up, so that they know what they're doing. And then probably the cheapest way that you can get college credits is advanced placement. If you take advanced placement tests, and they're like college tests, they're like college classes. And for high school students, they're very challenging. They're like trying to take a college class a little bit slower than a college pace, because it's usually over a year instead of over just a semester. But that's a great warm up to college. You know, one of my children took 10 AP tests while they were in high school.
Wow.
And I think they passed 7 of them, enough to get college credit, and they got enough college credit to enter halfway through their sophomore year. And they ended up graduating a year early, which is a great savings. It's a 25% savings on a college education. If you don't get a lot of AP credits, or maybe you're not quite that caliber, mm-hmm. then 2 years of community college is probably the cheapest way. If you have 2 years of community college and you do well, all the Virginia state schools have to accept you. So if you think it's hard to get into UVA, you can go to community college for 2 years, get good grades, and UVA will have to accept you as a transfer student. It's part of the University of Virginia school system, and it's a great idea. It also allows you to take those 2 years perhaps at a slower pace and with less distraction that you might have at a four-year institution. And your degree will still say University of Virginia at the end of the next 2 years, and you get it for an additional half price.
And by the way, it is incredibly cheaper those 2 years versus the 2 years that you would pay for the first 2 years at UVA.
Yeah, I used to teach at an excellent community college, one of the top community colleges in the country, out in Eugene, Oregon, Lane mm-hmm. Community College. And our you know, bumper sticker, if you were, was we're part of the solution, meaning that we can help train people very inexpensively for all kinds of different degrees. And that was back when computer science was just getting started. Picking the right school for the return on investment, I think, is another way that you can do that. There is a website that gives you the return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out the University of Virginia is number one for the return on investment of any college in the country, meaning that if you go to the University of Virginia, the return for what you spend for your education is 17.6%. I wish I could get a 17.6% on the stock market. That's an incredible return. What it means is that University of Virginia graduates earn that much more than a non-college graduate. And then you just divide by, the costs. My alma mater, Stanford, is number eight on that list, meaning, yes, it's expensive, but the people who go there end up having a much better return. College of William and Mary is number four, and it has a 14.8%. And University of Virginia fans will appreciate this, but even Virginia Tech is on the list with a 12.2%. They're number 60th in the country in terms of getting an education. So Virginia has some great schools with some great return on investment, and you should take an opportunity to take a look at that.
Where is that website, by the way? Do you have the URL?
It is at payscale.com.
Okay.
And it's a college return on investment. Just search for that on that. And then you can also take a look at what you want to major in. There are some majors that are just not worth a college education. And I know if you want to go to college to find yourself, broaden your horizons, and get a general liberal arts education, that's perfectly okay, but know what you're buying.
Mm-hmm.
And going into debt for that may not be the best solution. Also know that what you really learn from college is you learn the ability to think, write, and study. And so if you're taking classes that don't require you to think, write, and study really hard, and they're not challenging there, and you're just kind of getting by, you're not getting very much out of your college education. The average education degree has a starting salary of about $34,000. The average engineering degree, it's $59,000. So one of the ways to look at it is, if on your salary you can't pay back your debt, paying 10% of your salary toward your student debt in 5 years, it's not worth it. So an education degree, you probably shouldn't borrow more than about $17,000, but for an engineering degree, you can borrow almost $30,000. And those kinds of calculations will at least tell you if you're finding yourself and your liberal arts education is actually just setting back your finances tremendously, from which you'll never recover. And so different degrees have different returns on investment because of that.
Yeah, there was a guy that we met when we first moved here, and we were living out in the Scottsville area, and he had just graduated with a degree in French literature or something like that. And, he seemed very pleased with his degree, but when it found time to get a job, he was searching for years, and there just was nothing there. And it was almost like this conversation we had earlier about, hey, maybe you ought to sit down with somebody and discuss this degree specifically and what your prospects are before you decide on it and commit to it.
I took a federal taxation class out at PVCC, the local community college, and it was filled with three University of Virginia graduates in English who were now going back to take one class in order to go get a job actually helping people prepare their taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some careers that are very easy to do, and there are some that are much harder to find a job in. Probably the most important one is being serious about college.
Yeah.
If you're at college, you need to be serious about it. And avoiding substance abuse is probably the number one thing as to whether or not your college experience will be worth it, or you'll even remember it. So I would say that's an important thing. Attending class, these sound like obvious things, but attending class, I know one professor who said, if you attend class, you do the readings, and you sit in the first third of the class, you will get an A, and if you don't, you won't.
I think about this issue of being serious about college, and particularly the issue of substance abuse, and it kind of goes back to the general discussion that's been going on surrounding the culture at the University of Virginia. But this insistence upon 18-year-olds, and especially today's 18-year-olds or sometimes 17-year-olds, living away from their home in that environment for the first 2 years out of some what I would call perhaps an antiquated notion – I don't think that's good for these kids because they are out of the purview of the people who could probably keep them from abusing substances, and those people are never informed when they do.
Yeah, we were talking recently about the University of Virginia being in the news and all the issues associated with it. About a decade ago when my kids were young, if we were out late at night, especially on a Friday or Saturday night, I would make it a point of cruising by Rugby Road and driving down the road. And we'd play it. My kids reminded me of this. We would play it almost like a Can You Spy? And we'd say, okay, so what we have to find is we have to see if we can find a girl who's modestly dressed. Because it's too easy to find the alternative.
Yeah.
We have to find someone who's passed out on the lawn. We have to find, and we just use that as an object lesson for how some people waste their college experience. And we did that enough times that my kids remembered it, and neither of my kids had a problem with substance abuse because we talked about what that was like and what that would do to you and what it would do to your mind and what it would do to your grades and what it would do to your future prospects and the whole reason you're going to college.
977-1070 is the phone number. One segment left with David Murata. We're talking broadly about funding a college education, and we welcome you. Philip stands by, 977-1070, and The Shilling Show will be right back. The Shilling Show, weekdays from noon to 2 here on 1070 WINA. Continuing with David Murata, president of Murata Wealth Management, online at muratahonmoney.com. All right, so let's get into why we have this problem. I mean, there's a lot of money being spent. I'm not sure that the value is there, but how much faster are college tuition costs rising compared to other things? There's quite a discrepancy, isn't there?
There is. College costs have been going up by 8 to 10% annually, which is more than remarkable. It's ridiculous. And I went to Stanford for less money than it costs now to go to the University of Virginia. So the costs have just skyrocketed since I went to school. Mm. And one of the reasons is that the government has really stepped up in the student loan program and flooded the market with student loans. I know students now may not feel like it, and the students now would say, well, I need all that money because college costs so much, but they've got the cause and effect wrong, that college costs so much because so much student loan money was thrown at it. Now there's over a trillion dollars of student debt that's sitting on people, and college has been priced out of most of the mid-market, which was never true before. You know, government intervention and especially government money is like introducing an invasive species to an ecosystem. It ruins the ecosystem. And it changes the balance that's been set up in an ecosystem and trashes it such that now you've got a bigger problem, and the bigger problem is whatever the problem was caused by this invasive species. You know, the ecosystem is the free markets, and they do have a balance. They have a balance of cause and effect, and that's what government has done. And it's difficult to know what to do with that, because until government money is out of the equation and government is pushing that up, it's very difficult to solve the problem, and sometimes the solution in the short term is going to be a little bit painful, just like the government money being thrown at it was a little bit beneficial. But in the long run, it's really important to take that out.
Let's talk about public policy and public funding and vouchers. You came up with what I thought was just a very remarkable point.
Yeah, most public policy regarding public funding of college is really just a poorly designed voucher system.
Mm-hmm.
It's trying to give money to schools, but it's trying to give it in a way that is not empowering the consumer. It's more than anything just throwing money at colleges. And I was struck by the fact that what makes them think that a badly designed voucher system is good for the optional funding of higher education. And a voucher system that would be more empowering of parents wouldn't be best for the required education of primary schools. Primary schools, you have to go, so we already know we're funding it. Mm-hmm. Why not empower elementary schools to be able to pick and choose? All of the arguments for the public funding of college would be better spent on the public funding of elementary education, and then it would be better to empower. In both cases, it would be better to have a voucher system that empowers the consumer rather than one that really sort of bypasses the consumer.
Well, have no fear. Obama man is here, and he has a plan for making college more affordable. So let's talk about the president coming to the rescue riding in on a big horse.
Yeah, one of the things he wants to do is he wants to only give student loans to go to colleges where you're making progress toward your degree. It sounds like a wonderful thing to do. I mean, why would you want to fund somebody who's not making progress mm-hmm. toward their degree? Because progress toward a degree is at least a measurement of education actually happening. But the problem with that is a problem that's true for a lot of forms of government, and that is an economic principle called Goodhart's Law. And Goodhart's Law says when a measure becomes a target, it ceases to be a good measure. Mm. So you have this measure of progress toward your degree, but when it becomes the target that colleges have to accomplish, it ceases to be a good measure. Just a couple of examples of Goodhart's Law. In the Soviet Union, they said, well, the number of nails that were produced, you're talking about the five-year plan. We need to have a five-year plan for how many nails are produced. And so we'll have a goal. And so all of the Soviet nail factories produced really, really small nails, but they produced thousands of them. They weren't good for anything, but they met the measure. And then they said, okay, that doesn't work. What we really need to measure is we need to measure the poundage of nails produced. So they produced very, very few really large nails that weighed a lot. And that was the solution. So the problem with Goodhart's Law is that the measure is best by the consumer. The consumer knows what a nail is good for, and they know how to buy a nail, and they know what nails they want to buy and what nails they don't want to buy, and the consumer's the best measurement of that. And anytime you have a government measure, the government measure becomes what everyone is trying to do because that's where your funding is. And that money is the invasive species into an ecosystem that really ruins the ecosystem. And so that's the problem with most of Obama's challenges. Most of Obama's challenges to colleges is they're trying to use measurements other than the customer satisfaction of the parents and students thinking that they've gotten a good deal. The real funding, the real value that you can tell when you graduate and you can find a good job. Because those things are hard to measure, and government can't measure them. Government can't legislate them. But you know, with the time and effort that parents and high school students put into picking a college, there's no better amount of energy that someone could put in. And so it's best just to empower them to make the decision responsibly.
David Murata, I always enjoy our conversations. I guess this will be the last one for this year, but we'll come back next year and do it all over again. There's always something good to talk about with you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
MuratAOnMoney.com is the website.